Started. Shabbat Shalom, everyone. So we in Leviticus 25. Leviticus 25. What a journey it's been through Leviticus. So we're about to end Leviticus. Next week we'll end Leviticus, and we'll be going into the next book, which is going to be incredible because it speaks of all of their journeys and so forth, and the Numbers, the children of Israel, is going to be incredible. I was going over some of it today, and just to take a little sneak preview as a reminder for myself, it's going to be some good stuff coming up in Numbers. So we'll get started. We'll start Leviticus 25. We'll start our reading, and I'm not sure how I'm going to handle this. I might just read it all the way through and then come back and look at it a little bit at a time. But we only have one chapter. We have one chapter and two verses from chapter 26. So I don't want to say it's relatively short because there's nothing short about our Torah portions. Compared to other ones, it's a little short. But we do have 340 slides or so to go over when we do go over them. But hopefully you'll take some time. How many long it takes you to read 340 slides? It takes a while. You take them in different sections, put time, you go over them and look up the words. It takes a while, but you can get some good information there and helps you kind of go along the way. So what we see overall with this Leviticus chapter 25 is this Torah portion is chapter Torah portion number 32 is Behar, and it's Hebrew for on the mountain or at Mount Sinai. On the mountain or at Mount Sinai, and it's Leviticus 25, verse 1 through 26, verse 2. And then we have the half Torah, Jeremiah 16, verse 19 through 17, 14. Real good reading there. It's really incredible. In this week's Torah portion, on the mountain of Sinai, Elohim communicates to Moshe the laws of the sabbatical year. So he's going to communicate the laws of up to this point, they don't know nothing about the sabbatical year. They know about Shabbat, but we have a new term here, the sabbatical year. He's going to give the laws concerning this sabbatical year and what it means. Every seventh year, all work on the land should cease. And its produce become free for the taking for all man and beast. Now, the thing was, because they were an agricultural people, or going to be, soon to be, or some 40 years later there would be, because they're still at Mount Sinai. They don't have land. They don't have fields. They don't have divided land, some from each tribe. They don't have that yet. But he's telling them, when you go into the land, this is what's going to happen. So this particular, and we see that often said when you come into the land, meaning they have the rules, but they haven't come into the land yet. And when they come into the land, then these things would actually go into full force. But we see here is during this particular time, he's going to explain to them that this particular sabbatical year, every seventh year, you're not supposed to reap the harvest for sale. You don't reap the harvest for sale, but whatever grows of itself belongs to everybody equally. It belongs to everyone. So again, this is just some terminologies we'll look at as we go along. The next thing we'll look at is the seven sabbatical cycles are followed by a 50th year called the Jubilee year, on which work on the land ceases. All indentured servants are set free. An indentured servant, we'll look at that. What does that mean to be an indentured servant? We'll look at what does that mean as we read through. And all ancestral estates in the set-apart land that have been sold revert to their original owners. Additional laws governing the sale of land and prohibitions against fraud and usury are also given. And we're going to learn about what it means when he talks about sale of land. Because we're going to learn some things that Israel, even though Abraham was given the land, He wasn't given the land where he could actually lay claim to the land and sell it off to someone else. He was given a long-term lease. Who owns the land ultimately? Jehovah. And so the land could not be sold. Hence the definitions we're going to look at on this land reverting back to its original owner. Because the land could not be sold. It all belongs to Jehovah. All you are is a leaseholder. You hold the long-term lease. And as long as you adhere to Jehovah's commands and his right ruling and his mishpatim, the land is yours. If not, it's not yours. You'll be put out of the land. And we see Israel go through that during the time of Nebuchadnezzar. They went through some terrible stuff simply because they started allowing the land to be taken over back by God that had already given possession. It was going right back to the people that they took possession from. And so they went into captivity and they suffered for it. Elohim promises that if the people of Israel will keep his commandments, they will enjoy material prosperity and dwell secure in their homeland. But he also delivered a harsh rebuke, a warning of exile and persecution and other evils that will befall them if they abandon their covenant with him. Nevertheless, even when they are in the land of their enemies, I will not cast them away, nor will I ever abhor them to destroy them and to break my covenant with them, for I am Jehovah, their Elohim. So no matter how much they were in exile, no matter how many people died off, he would not abandon his covenant. The same way we see in the next month when we look at the Numbers account, we're going to see how they going through and they wandering in the wilderness and all of them die off. And only a few people made it in the end because he won't abandon. Now, he had all rights to abandon everybody, but he wouldn't do it because he made a covenant. And as long as we adhere to the covenant agreement with the terms of the covenant, then we can still take possession of the land. We treat it as if we own the land because it's a long-term lease. It's not a lease that expires. It's long-term. Yet, nonetheless, it all belongs to Jehovah, and it needs to be treated with such respect. He's not going to allow us to put up altars and Asherah poles and worship Baal on his land. He will come against that. He will destroy it. And sometimes that destruction causes people's lives, and we've seen that happen many times throughout Israel's journeys. And so let's go to Leviticus chapter 25, and we'll begin reading with verse number 1. And Jehovah spoke to Moshe on Mount Sinai, saying, and that's why we have Behar today. He spoke to him on Mount Sinai, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give you, then the land shall observe a Shabbat to Jehovah. The land shall observe a Shabbat. Now they know about what Shabbat means. They know what it means because he commanded them many times up to this point what Shabbat was. They knew that Shabbat was on the fifth day. They knew it was on the sixth day. They knew it was on the first day. No, they knew it was on the seventh day. There was no question about that. That had already been established. They know that it was on the seventh. And if we read the Bible and we're trying to gain information and somebody says, when's Shabbat? You're going to say it's on the seventh day because we've learned that by looking at the Torah and understanding God. Who laid out that it's the seventh day? I didn't do that. You didn't do that, but Jehovah did that. And that's the one that we're supposed to be worshiping. That's the one we're supposed to be in. We're supposed to be honoring him. We're supposed to be recognizing him as the true Elohim. There's no God like him. And he established that the Shabbat is on the seventh day. Not me and you. Not some religious organization. He established that. Yet how is it most of the church world has come up with this idea that Shabbat could be any day? It could be any day. You just pick a day. Where in the scripture do we see that he said, I want you to make a day set apart? He didn't say make a day set apart. He said remember the set apart day that I've set apart. Because remember, we're in his kingdom. We're going to follow his commands and his right ruling, his mishpatim. Why? Because the way he spells it out is the only way we can conduct ourselves in his presence and be set apart and be clean before him. Other than that, we're going to come to him. We're not going to be properly fit in order to come before him. You know, the priest, the high priest, when he went in, he had to go in dressed a certain way. He had to have a certain garment on. He couldn't put it half on. God wouldn't tolerate that. And when he brought fire, he couldn't just go get any fire. It had to be the fire that God had authorized that was set aside to light and do what needed to be done. And so we see that God has rules. He set these rules for our benefit, not to hurt us. And so we see that he speaks to the children of Israel and says to them, when you come into the land which I give you, then the land shall observe a Shabbat to Yehovah. Who's it to? To Yehovah. It's what it is. It's in recognition that Yehovah is our provider. He don't want us to have to do it all 7 years on our own. So we got to make it work. He wants us to understand that he's our provider. Now, the big picture or the practical side of this Leviticus 25 is probably not what you think. Because when you get down into it and start studying it out, there's some things in here that if we wanted to, we couldn't do. How is that? Because most people don't farm. They're not farmers. They're not agricultural people. And so the practical side, everybody can do. Every person. That's understand this. That when he says, I'm going to take care of you, he means that. And we got to be able to trust him with that. And the way we trust him with that is at a minimum, we should at least work 6 days and on the seventh day rest from our labors. Amen. We can participate in that. And then on an annual basis, we see how he gives us this understanding that no matter what happens, when you go seven sevens, then the next day is going to, the next year will be 50. That'll be a sabbatical year or a year of jubilee. Then all indentured servants, land that was bought, money that was owed is all clear and free. Now, we know that's not practiced today because when we go 50 years, your mortgage don't, after 50 years, don't come clean. The banks still want their money because we don't participate in that. The world don't participate in that. The lending companies don't participate in it. And neither can you expect them to participate in that. When you join yourself inside of a system that don't participate in it, you're obligated to that system. That's just what it is. But Israel was not allowed to do that. They weren't allowed to do that. He wanted them, if they were going to borrow something, they borrowed from within their group. And the lender, he was hesitant. If it was the sixth year of a seventh year, going to be the next seventh year was going to be the Jubilee year, you weren't getting that money. Now, we can go back in the Talmud and see this. This is recorded things that they actually lived by. In the Talmud, they wrote these things down. They wrote them down, recording their actions, how they handled business. Why weren't you getting it in if there was only 1 year left? Because the chance of them getting it back was zero. And so a lot of people, they wanted to go and borrow as much as they could, and then they have 1 year, and then eventually it goes away. Well, they caught on to that quick. You're not getting it. You're not obligated to do it. Now, if you're in poverty, they're still going to help you. They're going to give you food. They're going to give you enough to make it alone, but they ain't giving you enough to buy a house. They ain't giving you enough to start your own business. Not going to happen. Nor does he state that that should happen. So as we go through this, you'll see that this is some very powerful things, especially now because we've been counting the Omer. And what we see in the Omer count is this footprint, exact footprint. We started counting the Omer. We count seven Sabbaths. We don't count something else. We count seven Sabbaths. And then on after the seventh Sabbath, seven times seven is 49, plus one is 50. Then we have Shavuot, and he's telling you, Shavuot, again, it's representing for us, and we're about to celebrate Shavuot in a couple days. He's letting us know, when I don't care what's going on in your life, how much you got yourself tied down to everything, when I show up, I set you free, and you're free indeed. And that's the practical thing that we have to embrace and grab hold of this, because we see the wonderful picture that's laid out for us. But in the seventh year, the land is to have a Sabbath rest, a Sabbath to Jehovah. Do not sow your field and do not prune your vineyards. Do not reap what grows of its own, of your harvest, and do not gather the grapes of your unpruned vines, for it is a year of rest for the land. Now, when it says do not gather here, it says it twice, it's going to say this, but it almost appears like you can't gather anything, right? When we read it. But he's talking about don't gather it for sale. You don't gather it for sale. This is what he means when you read its entirety. He's saying don't gather it to bring it to the market. You're going to be fine. You got to trust what I'm doing for you. You got to understand he's bringing them to a land that they've never been before. And the land, you have to understand this. Very important to understand this. As long as Israel's in the land produces. The moment Israel's out of the land quits producing. This is historical reality, historical fact. When Israel's in the land blooms like crazy. When they're out of the land, it don't do anything. You can go look now and see some of the land that Israel's given to Palestine. It's not fruitful. You have to ask yourself why. Only a fence separates one field blooming like crazy, another field don't have nothing. Why? Because they're not supposed to have it. It's not theirs. But because of political reasons, things go on in the world that's out of scope with us. Let me just tell you, in August the 29th, 2005, what does that bring to memory? Katrina. Do you know that within that same week is when our government encouraged the Israeli government to give a big plot of land during that same week, and they decided to do it. And then we have a storm come. It may not be every case, but the majority of cases when you have disasters that happen, it all is connected to Israel in one way or another because they're disobeying God. And the countries that are participating in that, being us, the United States of America, who was heavily saying, in order to have peace, you got to give them the land. Well, we give them the land, they still shooting bombs. It didn't help at all, not a single bit, because they want more. And they want more. It's going to continue to be that way because there can be no peace on given land, because the land is a long-term lease. It belongs to Jehovah. And what they do is the moment they buy the land, they put a mosque up or they'll do something and he says, not going to have it. And there'll be repercussions of that every single time throughout the world. This will happen every single time. But I didn't know that until this week when I was looking into this. I was saying, what's some of the things that happen during the time of these disasters? And that same week is when the Israeli government decided to give that whole section of land over. And the moment they did that, disaster starts hitting. And why did it hit in America? Because we were the proponents of the negotiation to make it happen. We were the reason it happened. We were saying it's the best thing to do. And if you do that, don't worry, we're going to give you weapons. They don't need weapons, they need the land. Remember, if you have the land, you secure the land, you're staying in covenant with God. You give the land, you're out of covenant with God. What happens next is not good. And we were the major proponents. And so what we had happen was Katrina hit, and it caused multi-billions of dollars of long-term residual costs when it comes to shutting the river down and grain, exports, imports, all of that. Untold billions of dollars it cost, not counting the damage. not counting the life loss, because of us being proponents of the land negotiation that happened that same week. And so it's really, it opens your eyes when you're dealing with this, because the land promised to Abraham is serious to God. He promised the land to him. It's a land deal. That's why Yeshua is going to come back and he's going to claim the land. He's going to claim it all. Every inch of it that's in the promise, he's going to claim the land. And when he claims that land, it's going to be a fight against that land. And Gog and Magog is going to come up against that, but they will be defeated according to Scripture. So when you see these things, you don't have to be afraid. You don't have to succumb. You don't have to get in fear. You don't have to cower down. You stand on the foundation that you've been taught. Now, if you hadn't been taught anything, it's going to be a tough day for you. But when you stand on the principles of Yehovah, you're going to say, I see this stuff all over the pages of the Word. I'm not afraid. I'm going to stand on the principles of God and see the hand of God move mighty for us. That you have to have that confidence. And when you study the Word of God, that's what it does. It produces confidence in you. That's why he said, buy truth. If you're going to invest some time and money, buy truth. Get a hold of truth, because it's the only thing that's going to help us. Verse 6, in the Sabbath of the land shall be to you for food, for you and your servants, and for your female servants, and for your hired servants, and for the settlers who sojourn with you, and for your livestock, and the beasts that are in your land, all its crops are for food. And you shall count 7 Sabbaths of years for yourself, 7 times 7 years, and the time of the 7th Sabbath of years shall be to you 49 years. 7 Sabbaths of years, 7 times 7 is 49. And it's just simple math. This is not something that's not simple. It's simple math. If we do 7 Sabbaths, 7 times 7 is 49 years. And then we have the 50th year, which is the Jubilee year. And that's when everything gets brought back to its. If you borrow money, it's canceled. If you sold land, it's brought back to its original owner. And now, let me go back and deal with this selling land, because I'm going to forget it if I don't. You sell the land in Israel. Say I had a piece of land that was given. It was coming down, because all the land was divided up into each group of people. Each of the 12 tribes of Israel had a blotch of land. You can go pull up maps, and you'll see it. It shows the land of Reuben, the land of Gad, the land of Judah, the land of, goes all through them, every one of them. And so within that family unit, that land is all their land. They're farming the land. They're getting along with each other. They're working together. And then the father dies, it's automatically that the firstborn son, he gets the land. And his son, and so on and so forth. So it's going on and on. Now you're going along, and the firstborn son, he inherits the land from his father, and he fell on hard times. Maybe he was walking along, broke his leg, and he couldn't work for a while, and he couldn't get in the field. And so what he had to do in order to get food for his family is he had to sell a portion of the land. So what he would do, he would go out there and mark a section off, and he said, this land I'll sell to you. Now it was different than the sale we have. You know, we buy the land and we mark it off and we sell an acre of land. And if I sell an acre of land to you, you're buying it what acreage cost. Then they didn't sell land that way. The land was only worth what it was able to produce. If land was able to produce something, if it say this land right here is going to give me 4 crops every year for this many years, that's how it was based on the sale. It was based on what the land could actually give to the person. Other than that, it was worthless. Didn't mean nothing to them. They didn't want land that had a bunch of rocks. They couldn't farm it at all. It meant nothing to them. There was no value in that. But if it had clear land where they could farm, it had value, and they would exchange it. So he says, I'm going to let you take this section of land. I'm selling you this land for you to work this land for 4 years. You get 4 crops. Is it a deal? And he said, well, give me the amount of money that you're going to get for the. And that's how it was exchanged. When that was over, it went back to the person. And so you wouldn't forget to do that. You know, you own it for 49 years, and you say, man, I like this piece of land. This is good land. And the 50th year, it went back to the person. It was no fall in love. It's mine. It's mine. None of that was happening here. Because there was no deed given to that land. That land was only transferred based on what it was able to produce. And what it was able to produce, that's how you was able to get money. Now, if you didn't have any land, you broke your leg, you were in trouble. So what you could do is you could take, but you had a son, but your son was only 13. So what you did, you took your son and said, I want you to go work for so-and-so, and you worked for him for 2 years. Now, when that son went over there, it was like his son. This wasn't, he didn't beat him and tie him to a post that night and feed him a piece of stale bread in the evening. Not this, we're talking about this servitude was different. When he went to that man's house, it was like his son. He treated him like his son. He had to have room and board. He had the food. Everything his family got, he got. But he was working for no money. He wasn't getting paid because he's working off this debt that the father had. So when the Jubilee come, the debt wasn't paid, it's over. Son goes back home. Jehovah was trying to say, there's going to be a time that I'm going to bring my people and I'm going to forgive all the iniquities and their transgressions and everything. I'm going to announce this, and when I announce this, I want you to understand that I told you ahead of time. But what was surprising to me is historically, I haven't found a single place in history that Israel actually kept the Jubilee year like he describes here. And we wonder why they're constantly at war or being attacked or whatever it is that's happening. It's amazing. Now, back in the 1800s, Mark Twain visited Israel. He wrote it in one of his books. He visited Israel and he says, when he looked at the land, he said he seen no life in it. It was desolate. There was nothing. He said, why would anybody want to live in this desolate place? That was his view of Israel. But when God brought the children of Israel back to the land, 1948, it became a state, and they were moving back by the millions. Did the land change? They didn't get a new land. It's the same land. But when they got back in the land started producing. And it's now known as one of the richest farming lands to ever be because the people got back in the land. The people weren't there. There's no reason for the land to produce. They weren't there. And so when we get where God wants us to be, you're going to produce. It's just that simple. When you're not where he wants you to be, there'll be no harvest, none whatsoever. And so these are just some wonderful principles that come to my mind as I was thinking about this. In verse 9, and you shall sound the shofar sound on the 10th day of the 7th new moon at Yom HaKippurim, cause a shofar to sound throughout all your land. Now we know the timing of this sabbatical year or this Jubilee year. What month is it going to be in? By what I just read, what month is it going to be in? When you keep the Sabbath, what month is it going to be in? In the 7th month. How do we know that? How do we know that? It's going to be in the 7th month because it says on the 10th day of the 7th new moon. On the new 7th new moon is the 7th month, and on the 10th day we know that's Yom HaKippurim. So during that time we know that that's when you start that sabbatical year starts. When it's the 50th year. So he tells us the timing of it and everything. And you shall set the 50th year apart and proclaim release throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It is a yovel. It is a yovel for you and each of you shall return to his possession, and each of you shall return to his clan. This is a powerful, powerful message. We see Jehovah making sure, no matter what you've been through throughout the 49 years, whatever it is that you had, all the hang-ups and hiccups and you name it you had, during the 50th year, I'm gonna proclaim a rest for you. It's going to be a sabbatical year, and I'm going to set all the records straight. Everything will be leveled out. What we see happening here is him coming through for a people. Some are in the position they're in because of what they did. But regardless of what they did, he's still in the 50th year. He levels the playing field. It's a wonderful picture. Now, we see some terminology being spoken by Yeshua in Luke. Go to Luke. Luke chapter 4. We'll start with verse 15. And he was teaching in their congregation, being praised by all. And he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, according to his practice. He went into the congregation on the Sabbath day. When he went? On the Sabbath, because it was what? His what? His practice. It's what he did all the time. Just like you and I are doing it all the time. What we should be doing all the time. It should be our practice. If we're followers of Yeshua, and if we claim Yehovah to be our God, the one that's the Most High, there's no one higher than him, it should be our practice. That's why it was Yeshua's practice. Why? Because he's following the commands of his father. So he, let me read that again. He came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and according to his practice, he went into the congregation on Sabbath day and stood up to read. And the scroll of the prophet Jesaiah was handed to him, and having unrolled the scroll, he found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of Jehovah is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor." What's good news to the poor when it comes to sabbatical? It means what they lost, it gets brought back to them. That's good news for the poor. What's good news about when Yeshua is going to return? Because when he returns, it's going to be during that sabbatical time. When he returns, what's going to be good news to us? It's going to be wonderful news. And he's telling us this. He said, I'm here to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted. How many of you know during we use the term Jubilee? Like, it's a time that's just, you're jubilant, right? But also Jubilee carries with it some difficult times people were in. They were facing some of the most difficult times of their life. Some of them have lost during the 49 years. Some of them have lost property. They lost their wealth. They lost it. For whatever reason, it could have been their own fault, but they lost it. But he says, during this time, it'll revert back to you. He's trying to show us a principle that no matter how difficult it gets, if you'll trust what I'm telling you, I'll get you out of it if you'll trust me. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim release to the captives. Why is it release to the captives? Because the indentured servants were released. They were released. Now, that's that boy that went over to the man at work, he couldn't say, "Well, I changed my mind, I want to go home." It was, when he got there, it was it. He had to work it, whatever it was, whatever the agreement was. If it was 4 years, he worked 4 years off. This is important for our understanding. Now, we hear Yeshua speaking these words, but do we understand what he's talking about? Do we really understand that what he's talking about is Leviticus 25? Now, we can't understand what he's saying. We can't understand the parables that, remember he said, to you I speak in parables, but to them they don't even know what I'm saying. Why they knew? Because they were trained in the Torah, and they were trained in the correct way, because they was walking and talking with the Torah teacher himself, not going under rabbinic law and traditions of the old Torah. They wouldn't understand what he was saying. He spoke parables, they didn't understand what he was saying. But the disciples understood because he rerouted their direction. He got them back on track. He got them out of their rabbinical traditions, and he put them right back on the Word of God, and they understood what he was saying. To heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim release to the captives, the recovery of sight to the blind, to send away crushed ones with their release, and to proclaim the acceptable year of Yehovah. To proclaim the acceptable year of Yehovah. What year is he proclaiming? He's proclaiming the Jubilee. He's proclaiming this year for us. And only Yeshua is capable of proclaiming this year. And we can't wait till he comes back and claims that year. When he comes back and claims that year, it don't make no difference if they captured you, put you in prison. Do you think it makes a difference when he returns? It don't make a difference if they kill you, imprison you, put you in poverty because they take all your stuff. That doesn't matter. When your foundation's correct, you're not sweating that. That's the small stuff. You know it won't be long. It won't be long. It won't be long. And when he comes, we know that he's gonna set the record straight. Nothing can stop that. And having rolled up the scroll, he gave it back to the attendant and sat down, and the eyes of all the congregation were fixed upon him. They were staring at him. Nobody read Isaiah like this before. What is he doing? And he began to say to them, today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing. Because on his first coming, he was letting them know, I'm here to let you know that if you'll follow me and trust what I'm telling you, you're going to be released from all this traditions that you've got yourself locked in. You'll be released from it. You'll be released from all the ear-tickling messages that have captivated your mind and your thoughts and inspired you, but they didn't give you foundation to stand on. They had no idea that they was the one that was proclaimed this to them is standing right there in their midst. They had no concept of it. Because in their mind, they literally wanted him to cast the Romans out. If you him, cast the Romans out. Little did they know that Yehovah was going to use the Romans to bring about our redemption. Because there's a term that we're going to learn here in a little bit. It's called the kinsman redeemer. Now, while I'm talking to you, please find that in the New Testament for me. Find kinsman redeem in the New Testament. Yet, this priest on out of the New Testament. But where did that concept come from? I can tell you where it comes from. Out of Leviticus 25, out of Ruth, the book of Ruth. 33 places in the Tanakh, the kinsman redeemer is referred to, and over half of those is referring directly to Yeshua. That's why he says, if you believe what Moshe said, you'd believe me, because he wrote about me. That's why he said that. Why else would he say it? He said, if you really believe Moshe, because they had a big claim, Moshe, Moshe, Moshe. They didn't believe what Moshe was saying, because if they would have believed what Moshe was saying, they'd have believed Yeshua, because exactly what Moshe was writing is exactly how he was living, exactly how he should have came, exactly the timing, the appointed town to the appointed times. Down to the very day, down to the very hour, down to the minute, he was the Messiah that was talked about who came and gave his life for all of humanity. And he's the only one that could be our kinsman redeemer. The only one. I could keep reading in full, but I better get back to Leviticus. Even though it's just one chapter, it'll get away on us. Verse 9 again. And then they sounded the shofar sound on the 10th day of the seventh new moon on Yom HaKippurim, caused the shofar to sound throughout all your land. And you shall set the 50th year apart. You set it apart. And proclaim release throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It is a Yovel for you. And each of you shall return to his possession, and each of you shall return to his clan. The 50th year is a Yovel to you. Do not sow nor reap what grows of its own, nor gather from its unpruned vines. It is a Yovel. It is set apart to you. Eat from the field its crops. In the year of this Yovel, let each one of you return to his possession. And when you sell whatever to your neighbor or buy from the hand of your neighbor, do not exploit one another. Now it's changing subject here, because now it's speaking, because Yeshua was asked this question. What's the greatest commandment? And he gives the answer. Thou shalt love Yehovah with all your heart, with all your soul, mind, and strength. And thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. They had no squawk. They didn't disagree with him. They said, he's right. Now we're dealing with love thy neighbor as thyself. Because during this time, it really checks your love for your neighbor. Especially if your neighbor owes you something. If they owe you something, you want it back in full. But our hard attitude, now listen, I know that we can't even, the only thing we have is what the Word says. As far as us going and looking at some example, historically, that this has ever transpired and actually was lived out like it's reading here. When you find it, please let me know. Hence, the reason Israel suffered so much throughout their generations. We see it happen over and over again. Because God was serious about this. Yet, in the life of Yeshua, is the closest thing we have to him actually coming and doing what he said. Living it out. That's why he proclaimed this. He said, this day, this was fulfilled in your hearing. Think about those words. It's a very powerful statement. And he's getting, and it's we see it as this wonderful passage that he reads from Isaiah, but he's rebuking them. He's letting them know. You haven't done this your entire life, and here I am to tell you, it's being done right now. There's a release for you. But you're going to have to accept me. You're going to have to accept that I'm Messiah. I'm going to be the one. Now, we know that this is directly tied to the ram caught in the thicket with Abraham. If you look up that word ram in the thicket, it's going to give the word what? Yovel. So the horns of the ram is then handed to the lamb who sounds the shofar, and that's the fulfillment of Yeshua actually bringing to fruition everything that he's going to do for his people. This connection is absolutely beautiful. Only the master planner could put it together that way. Only he could lay it out the way he did. It had to be a ram caught by the horn in the thickets, because the Yovel had to be, he said, sound the shofar. It's a jubilee. It's a time of release. And that's what Yeshua has done for all of us. And ultimately, we're going to see it come into its full fruition on that sometime in Yom Kippur, when that Yovel sounds during Yom Teruah. 10 days later, Yom HaKippurim is going to become a reality of realities for all the world, and we better be in a position where we know what to posture ourselves when it comes to that day where we deny ourselves, we afflict our being, and we say, Lord, I want to do what you asked me to do. Hopefully, that's what we're doing. By the teaching and understanding that we are laying out for you, I'm praying to God that if I'm not there, somebody's missing, you're doing what you know you're supposed to be doing at that time, because that's going to be a wonderful time that Yeshua is going to set the record straight. It don't matter who's in office. Somebody said, well, what if this one wins? It don't matter. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't. It don't matter who wins. It don't matter what political party. It don't matter what your belief systems are. All those things, you can do whatever you want. It don't matter that it looks like the church is always losing. Does it matter? Because he's going to set the record straight during this time, and there's nothing can stop that. And what a day that's going to be. What a time that's going to be in his presence. But remember, what we can do now, everybody say what I can do now. What you can do now is very important that we understand this. And when you sell whatever to your neighbor and buy from the hand of your neighbor, do not exploit one another. Don't cheat one another. You know, you don't wait for something that's, you know that it's on its last leg and you say, man, I better sell it before it breaks on me. I mean, you shouldn't even think that. I better sell it before it breaks on me. And then you know, you go ahead and you don't pin them on, you sell it the next day it breaks on the guy and you go, hey. And so we got terms like as is. Well, let me tell you, we should not join the as is club. Because that's not becoming those who are followers of Yeshua. We're not the as is club. The world can do whatever they want. But we have a certain responsibility of a certain time, whatever that is, to make good on what we do. Because we shouldn't exploit our brother. Amen. You say, well, who's our brother? It don't matter if it's a sojourner. Now, in this particular case, he's speaking of Israel to Israel. Because now, if it's a sojourner who dwells among you, his only way to dwell among you, is to have, even though he's Gentile, he's given up all his past life, God's worship practices, and he's joined Israel, he's your brother. I don't care what his blood says, he's your brother. And so that's what he's talking about here. Now, he's not talking about somebody who may be outside of that realm. So, that ain't even referring to this person. He's not talking about you can go make a deal with somebody else and don't matter how you do it. It does matter because this is specifically talking about your brother. The one that's in your house, the one that, no matter if he's a sojourner or a foreigner, if he's come in and dwells among you, he's given up that life, now he's your brother. And you say, why do we need that? Go to Romans 11. Romans 11, verse 1. I say then, has Elohim rejected his people? Let it not be. For I also am of Israel, the seed of Abraham, and of the tribe of Benjamin. Elohim has not rejected his people, whom he knew beforehand. Or do you not know that the scripture says of Eliyahu, how he pleaded with Elohim against Israel, saying, Jehovah, they have killed your prophets and overthrown your slaughter places, and I alone am left, and they seek my life. But what does the answer of Elohim say to him? I have left for myself 7,000 men who have not bowed the knee to Baal. I know you're isolated in how I called you, but your perception and where you're seeing things is not where I'm seeing them from. And some people's time, sometimes it's our perception of how we see something. It fools us a lot of times. Sometimes, you know what you got to do when you're not sure? Take a few steps back and get up a little higher. Get closer to God. Now you got a different perception. How I see everything now is a lot different than if I'm just in close range. Now my perception is different. Matter of fact, I could barely see anything over there. But when I got up, I could see everybody. Sometimes our perception is wrong, And we just got to get back up a little bit, get a little bit higher, get a little closer to God, and you'll see things differently. And so what we see here is Eliyahu, his perception was wrong. He thought he was the only one left because all he kept seeing, they're killing the prophets. They're killing everybody. If somebody says, puh, they dead. He's going around. Know what he's going on? He said, don't say puh. Don't be a prophet. They're killing them all. And so he's making his complaints to Yehovah. And Yehovah says, listen, I've reserved 7,000 who won't bow to knee to Baal. You're not the only one. So therefore, also at this present time, a remnant according to the chosen of favor has come to be. There's a remnant. You're part of the remnant. You ought to be so happy. You ought to be so thrilled. When Shabbat gets here, you should, I mean, it's clean slate. There's nothing else I want to be doing because I'm part of a remnant. And I'm so thankful God didn't forget me because we could be on the opposite end of this. You could have been one day away from being obedient or disobedient, and that's never coming to pass, never coming to fruition. We ought to be so grateful and so thankful that he didn't forget us. We're part of the remnant group, and he wants us to understand this. Now, I am reading in Romans 11, ain't I? I just want to make sure. So therefore, also at this present time, a remnant according to the choice of favor has come to be. And if by favor it is no longer of works, otherwise favor is no longer favor. And if it is of works, it is no longer favor. Otherwise, works is no longer works. What then? Israel has not obtained what it seeks, but the chosen did obtain, and the rest were hardened. As it has been written, Jehovah has given them a spirit of deep sleep. Eyes not to see, and ears not to hear unto this day. And Dawid also said, let their table become a snare, and for a trap, and for a stumbling block, and a recompense to them. Let their eyes be darkened, not to see, and bow down their backs always. I say then, have they stumbled that they should fall? Let it not be. But by their fall, deliverance has come to the nations to provoke them to jealousy. By their fall, deliverance has come to the nations to provoke them to jealousy. Why is that happening? Because it don't matter what the devil does. It don't matter what the enemy's got in the conspiracy against God's people. God will always take what the enemy meant for evil and he'll turn it around for good. Why? Because he's Jehovah. He's God. He's a loving father. He's all about life. He's going to always turn it around. Listen, they did this to Joseph. What was meant for evil, God turned around for good. If it wouldn't have been for Joseph to go through the whole task that he had to go through and keep a good attitude, they would have been in trouble. They would have been in so much trouble. But he kept a good attitude through it all. And it wasn't easy. It was difficult. It was very difficult to be separated from your family, to be ostracized, to be lied about, to be cheated on, to have all this stuff, to be promoted and put down and have all this stuff happen. It was not it was not easy. But he stayed, God, you're the only thing I have. That's what he settled in his heart. I don't have nothing. I only have you. If I give you up, I'll lose everything. And God turned it around for good. And it caused his whole family to be saved. Because one person said, you know what? I'll do what you asked me to do. And that's what we have in the Son. We have that in Yeshua. That one person, that one Yeshua, he said, Lord, no matter, he was by himself. He was forgotten. His own disciples run out on him. And the last minute, they bailed on him, just like he said they would. He was by himself. He hung there on that cross between thieves. Yet, he was traded for a murderer. You couldn't have got more pushed down than that. And here he was. He said, God, if it's going to be worth it. In the end, it'll be worth it. And because of that, we ought to want to live for him with everything. We ought to have so much excitement. It just bothers me so many times. I think about where's people's excitement about serving God and living for him. What excites you during the week? What gets you going? It should be his word. It should be the fact that you get another chance, an opportunity to spend time with him. Because if you don't do it on a daily basis, it won't take long. You have a distance. It won't take long. You have a gap. It's in the gaps where the enemy brings deception. It's in the gaps where you allow your flesh to take over. It's in the gaps, those gaps that we allow, those breaches, is where the enemy sneaks in. We have to repair those on a daily basis. If you see one, you fix it right away. You don't wait. You fix it right away. You get in there and fix it, because it's not going to do the job that it's been made to do. And if their fall is riches for the world, their failure riches for the nations, how much more their completeness? For I speak to you, the nations, and as much as I am an emissary to the nations, I esteem my service. If somehow I might provoke you to jealousy, those who are my flesh, and save some of you. Now, this is one Jew speaking to another Jew. This is Shaul saying, I'm a Pharisee of Pharisees. I'm of the tribe of Benjamin. He said, you can't kid what I'm talking about. You can't pull it over on my. I'm trying to tell you, the reason I'm so committed, the reason I'm so dedicated, that somehow I might provoke you to jealousy. But this Yeshua is real deal. He's trying to tell them what he's done for us is the real deal. And you don't have to do it by the works of the law. You have to do it through faith and believing in Yeshua. And when you do that, now you obey the commands of Yehovah. Because now it's on the right path. It's got its right leader. It's got its right one that's leading us. And there's only one can lead you in the right path of the Torah. Only one. And that's Yeshua. And because we don't have a tangible touch of Yeshua, we have set-apart spirit who's been sent to guarantee that for us. We have that. And you shall receive power after that set-apart spirit has come on you, and you shall be witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria, and the uttermost parts of the earth. That's what he said. The only reason we know what it means now, because we see how he's released that for us. Without going to look at the instructions of what he says, you got to start making stuff up, and you pull all kinds of things. You get these one-liners and you build a whole doctrine on one-liner. It have no foundation whatsoever because you can't tie it back. It's like this kinsman, we have a kinsman redeemer. What you tying it to? Well, I can't say Leviticus 25 because that means I got to go back to the Old Testament. We disconnected from that. So what are you tying it to? They don't have nothing to tie it to. And so it becomes a religious statement. That's it. You have to look at it in its entirety. If I speak to you, the nations, inasmuch as I am an emissary to the nations, I esteem my service. If somehow I might provoke you to jealousy, those who are my flesh, and save some of them. For if their casting away is the restoration to favor of the world, what is their acceptance but life from the dead? Now if the first fruit is set apart, the lump is also. And if the root is set apart, so are the branches. The root is set apart, so are the branches. Now, we're not the root, but we know who the root is. We know who the root is, and if that root is set apart, and that root is Yeshua, he's set apart. And if you're in him, your branches will be set apart. It's just that simple. This is not rocket science. It's that simple. If the root's set apart, the branches are set apart also. You can't have some kind of other theory that Yeshua didn't have. And call it, well, we serve Yeshua. Well, your message is not his message. The lifestyle you live is not his lifestyle. How is that possible? You can make statements all day long, but it doesn't match what he said. He says, if the first fruit is set apart, the lump is also. Now, if he's the first fruit and we're the lump, shouldn't we be set apart? Now, we know what this means now, but until you read what set apart is, you have no clue what this is talking about in Romans 11 at all. You don't know what it means at all. So you have your own thought. Well, what it means to me is this, and you kind of set your church structure that way, and you go on and you become this, or that one becomes that. Each group becomes their own group. They all got their own rules, and we've all left the message that Yeshua taught. Watch what he says here. And if some of the branches were broken off and you become a wild olive tree, having been grafted in among them and came to share the root and the fatness of the olive tree, do not boast against the branches. And if you boast, remember You do not bear the root, but the root bears you. Now, this message is preached a lot, Romans 11. It's preached a lot about this being grafted in, but they don't go no further than that. They sure not going to tie it back. But we see what he's talking about here now. Now we see about this kinsman redeemer and what it all ties down to. Now we got to read, we do have to go read Ruth a little bit. Some point, maybe in the morning. Maybe I'll start with that. Be a good starting point. Are you with me still? How many see what he's talking about here? You shall say then, the branches were broken off that I might be grafted in. Good. By unbelief they were broken off, and you stand by belief. Do not be arrogant, but fear. That word fear is a very important word. And I don't have time to go into it tonight, but maybe in the morning we'll go a little bit deeper, because we're talking about the fear of Yehovah and how all of that comes together. I put it in the slides for you, but it's somewhere around the 300 mark or so, or the 250 mark. It's in there, but it's deep in there. And you know I'm not getting that far tonight. But the fear of Yehovah is important. The fear, understanding, it's all tied to his glory. The esteem we give him, the glory we give God. What type of, how do, when we speak of Yehovah, what does that do when we say that? What type of posture it sets? What kind of respect do we give him? What's the level in our deepest, deepest thoughts? What's the level of adoration that we give to Yehovah? The next thing is, what he says, does it matter to you? Because if it doesn't matter, you're not going to have a lot of fear. Now, it mattered to Adam, literally did matter to Adam, what God said. And we know that because he wouldn't have hid in the trees from Yehovah when God was going to come. He knew he was coming. He knew he was coming because he always came. He knew he was coming. So what did he do? He said, you know, he's coming. We've got to go hide. Why? Because he was afraid. Scripture says he was afraid. He said, I hid myself among the trees. I was afraid. That same word for afraid there is the same word we see when it talks about the fear of Yehovah and how it all ties in. And that fear, sometimes we use that term and we only think of it in an English way. Fear. If it's something you fear, you don't get closely acquainted with it. But it's the opposite in Hebrew. When you fear Yehovah, you closely acquaint yourself with him. It's the opposite, completely opposite. Because fear is directly tied to something that moves or flows. Directly tied to that. And so the fear of Yehovah is having a respect level for him. Now, when he says something, you don't ask questions. It's what he said. Somebody says, hey, you want to do this? Well, let me see. Let me see if it's within the realm. Can I do this? Do you want to go do this? Hey, we're going to go rob a bank. You want to go rob a bank? Now, we think and we know robbing banks in law, in American law, is wrong. You go to jail. But what supersedes or surpasses human law is God's law. You also can't do it under God's law. And so you got to go through those exercises. Well, I know if I go, I can get in trouble by human law, but if I go and do it against God, I can really get in trouble. I can lose my life forever and spend eternity apart from him if I do that. And so there's this list of things that he says we can and cannot do, and we have to have the fear of Yehovah that puts us in a position that word means whatever flows from him, I want that. I don't try to go around it. I want to receive what flows from him because of the fear of Yehovah, my respect level. So if he says something, you want to do it. You don't want to say, well, give me another definition. There was this game show one time, you can get choices, you know. Or you can, if you don't get the answer, you can buy another vial or something. You can get more information. And sometimes we want to buy a vial with God. We want more information. God, explain that to me. And he's just telling us, he says, listen, to him who stole, steal no more. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not take the name of Yehovah in vain. Remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. Honor your father and your mother. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not bear false witness. These are all things that he says don't do. And sometimes what happens, we do them. We do those things. And he's telling us, and when you do, the only reason you do them is because there's a certain fear of Yehovah that you don't have yet. You hadn't grasped that. Now, we know that you're saved. But if you want to actually learn to practice these things out, you will seek it like you seek wisdom. You seek wisdom. Wisdom is something you got to seek out for. You have to apply yourself to it and then take in the information that's put before you and then live it out and practice it out, and then you become smarter in that sense. And so that's what we have to understand, that he's telling us that when we accept Christ, we get saved, but how do you live for him? We know you got set apart spirit. How do you walk in the spirit? How do you do that? So you don't find yourself walking in the flesh all the time. How do you walk in the spirit? These are practices that we see throughout the Torah that explains how to do that. How do we make God actually, how does the blessing come? Because we're going to get, as you go further on, it talks about, in Leviticus 25, it talks about, if you do those things, I will do this. If you do these things, I will do this. He lays it out for us. And so we see that. Let me try to finish Romans 11, because I think I'm going to get caught right here. If some of the branches were broken off, and you, being a wild olive tree, having been grafted in among them, and come to share the root and the fatness of the olive tree, do not boast against the branches. And if you boast, remember, you do not bear the root, but the root bears you. You shall say then, the branches were broken off that I might be grafted in. Good. By unbelief they were broken off, and you stand by belief. Do not be arrogant, but fear. Do not be arrogant, but fear. For if Elohim did not spare the natural branches, he might not spare you either. This is a severe warning to us. Don't get too smart for your britches. If he didn't spare the natural branches, he might not spare you either. There's a certain part of our life that we can, even though we come in and we, being a wild olive tree, we get grafted into its original root system, we can still be cut off. He's telling us this. And so to think that you can't lose out with God is just foolish teaching. He's telling us, just like he told Israel, if you don't do what I'm telling you, this is what's going to happen to you. You're going to lose out. Did they lose out? Numbers is going to tell us that. We're going to find out how many just made it in the promised land after all that generation died off. See then the kindness and the sharpness of Elohim on those who fell sharpness, but toward you kindness. If you continue in his kindness, otherwise you also shall be cut off. You have to continue in his kindness. Now part of the thing that he's telling us, when you get into a situation with your brother, don't defraud him. He says don't overcharge him. Don't think, scheme up a way that you can get one over on him. He's your brother. Don't do that. And they also, if they do not continue in unbelief, shall be grafted in, for Elohim is able to graft them in again. The condition is you can't continue in unbelief. You have to come to belief. You have to come to faith in Yeshua, because this is the qualification. You have to have faith in Yeshua. Now you can say, well, I have the Torah. You can have all the Torah you want. There's no provision in the Torah to save you. Now one sacrifice was there to save you. You have to believe Yeshua, and now you can go back into the Torah and understand that these are the good works that you can now do. Without belief, none of them works are good. None, not one. I just read that to you in Romans 11. It's a very powerful chapter. It opens up your understanding, but if you hadn't been through the Torah two or three times, you read Romans 11, you're going to be lost. You're going to be lost. You won't know what to do. For if you were cut out of the olive tree, which is wild by nature, and were grafted contrary to nature into a good olive tree, how much more shall these who are natural branches be grafted into their own olive tree? Can God do that? Absolutely. And that's what we see him doing all over the world. This is happening. This is actually being lived out all over the world. For I do not wish you to be ignorant of this secret, brothers, lest you should be wise in your own estimation, that hardening in part has come over Israel until the completeness of the nations has come in, and so all Israel shall be saved, as it has been written, the deliverer shall come out of Zion, and he shall turn away wickedness from Jacob. This is my covenant with them when I take away their sins. Truly, as regards to the good news, there are enemies for your sake, but concerning choice, there are beloved for the sake of the Father. For the gifts and callings of Elohim are not to be repented of. For as you also at one time obeyed Elohim, but now have for you also at one time disobeyed Elohim, but now have obtained compassion throughout their disobedience. So also these have now disobeyed, that through the compassion shown, they might obtain compassion. For Elohim has shut them all up to disobedience in order to have compassion on all. Oh, the depths of riches of wisdom and the knowledge of Elohim, how unsearchable his judgments and untraceable his ways. For who has known the mind of Yehovah, or who has been his counselor? Who has known the mind of Yehovah, his counselor? Or who first gave to him, and it shall be given back to him? Because of him, and through him, and to him are all, to whom be esteem forever. Amen. What a powerful, powerful chapter in Romans 11. And it ends with those quotes out of the Tanakh. He's quoting from Yeshayahu, and he's quoting from Job, these wonderful quotes. And it's just powerful to see this being unfolded for us. I got a little bit of time left. Let's see if we cover a few more verses. Verse 15, according to the number of years after the Yovel you buy from your neighbor, and according to the number of years of crops you sell to your neighbor. I explained that earlier. Land is not based on how many acres it is. It's based on how much crops it can produce. That's what he's saying here in that verse. That's how you buy. If it can produce five crops over a five-year period, it's sold for the crop. Whatever the crops are sold for, that's what the land is worth. Other than that, it's not worth a nickel more. So it's very important that we understand that's how it was looked at according to Yehovah. According to the greater number of years, you increase its price, and according to the fewer number of years, you diminish its price, because he sells to you according to the number of years of the crop, not its acreage, not its by the foot. What can it actually produce? That's what it's worth. And do not oppress one another, but you shall fear your Elohim. You shall fear your Elohim, for I am Yehovah your Elohim. And you shall do my laws and guard my right rulings and shall do them, and you shall dwell in the land in safety. The qualifications, you shall do my laws and guard my right rulings and shall do them, and you shall dwell in the land in safety. And the land shall yield its fruit, and you shall eat to satisfaction, and shall dwell there in safety. He's given them some promises to trust him. I know it's a tough thing when everything's released during this Jubilee time, but I want you to know, trust me, I'm going to take care of you. What he promised is he was going to give such an increase in the sixth year, you wouldn't even know it happened. But you had to trust him. You had to put your faith in him. And so what we see in Leviticus 25 in this whole Jubilee reading, it's all about faith. It's all about trusting Yehovah, believing as real fact what don't make sense to you. It doesn't make sense that you're not going to harvest, you're not going to put seed in the ground, and you're not going to reap the harvest, and you're still going to have money. That don't make sense. He said, I want you to trust me. He said, it's a time to let the land rest. We've been letting it rest every seventh year you let it rest. But in the 50th year, it's an overall jubilee for everyone. And he said, this, I want everybody to understand, I'm going to take care of everybody. He was trying to let them know how big and how awesome he was. And they just needed to get their mind. Now, it's not their first experience with God explaining how he would take care of them. He'd been doing this since they left Egypt. Now, they still at Mount Sinai. They went very far. They ain't been traveling. We've been going through a lot of verses. They still been there. But they're about to get on the road. And when they get on the move, it's not going to be good for them because they start complaining right away. Right away they start complaining about, and he just got finished telling them, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And so he started to prove himself to them. He started to actually provide for them and do things for them, but they still couldn't get a hold to it, how important it is to put your faith in Yehovah. And let me tell you, without faith, when it says without faith it is impossible to please Yehovah, we read that. Let me tell you, we don't really understand it to its fullest. Now you should understand it to its completeness. You have to have faith in him. You have to trust that what he's doing, he's going to do what he said he would do. And since you might say, what do we eat in the seventh year? Not might say, they're going to say, and they still say in the day, well, what are we going to do? How are we going to make it? It's still, we have uncertainty about different things because we've been so conditioned to maintain our own life and do everything for ourselves, we lose sight that God is able to do things for us that it's hard to explain. He can come through for you. You have to be put in positions where you actually see God show out for you. But we don't want those times. Matter of fact, we hate those times. We don't even want to think about them. But you got to let God be God and do what he said he's going to do, because what he said he's going to do, you can trust that he'll do it every time. So let's stop right there. And we'll start again in the morning. This Jubilee chapter is a long chapter, so I'm glad it's only one. A lot going on in there.